Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I'm super excited. I was on this amazing woman's show last week. She blew me away with how much she knows and all she's doing out there. So I had to have her back immediately. Thank you for joining me, Dani Katz.
Hi, Mel. Thanks so much for having me. Great to see you.
Oh, great to see you. For my audience that might not be familiar with you, can you tell them a little bit about yourself and how you ended up being basically on the front line of trying to save people from, the propaganda and the giant blob coming at us?
Sure. Let's see. Well, I started off as a journalist back in Los Angeles, where I was writing for LA Weekly, LA Times, Vice, Teen Vogue, all those places. I was ejected, like slowly ejected from journalism when I started to speak out about woke culture, Black Lives Matter, gender reassignment surgery, stuff like that. The final nail in the coffin of my journalism career was when I co-wrote Plandemic 2, Indoctrination, which was super fun project. And I'm also a word wizard. So I write and I teach folks about how language programs reality, how to transform ourselves and our world with language. So I just came out with my second quantum languaging book called The Language of Betterarchy. And I also teach teens about propaganda and media literacy and how to safeguard their critical thinking.
Well, this is so necessary right now, probably more than ever in our lifetimes, though it's been going on in the shadows or not so much in the shadows. You and I both have a background in Hollywood, so it's very obvious when you're there how much propaganda is spread out and comes through channels without people even knowing it. So let's talk a little bit about your book and why you wrote this book and what exactly you are trying to wake people up to, because the sooner we understand language and how it's being used and how it's being inverted, and we can decode it in real time. I always say to people, you can't be propagandized if you know you're being propagandized. That is the secret. And you actually have a whole book that kind of decodes what you're looking at. So what is your advice to people out there that are just coming at this and they say, oh, it's so big. How do I piece this apart?
Yeah, so multiple pieces to this puzzle. I agree with you. Once we know how the propaganda is working, what techniques they're using, they don't work on us. So that's why I wrote Pop Propaganda, an Illustrated Guide. It features 37 tools, tricks, techniques that the social engineers use to try to manipulate us. I wrote that to accompany my homeschool course because the Bernays book, awesome though it is, just isn't that fun for teenagers. So that exists, and it's kind of an outcropping of my book on how language programs reality. So I started this new book, The Language of Betterarchy, just around like the Me Too time, when I noticed in LA, like all of my supposedly conscious and spiritual friends speaking about men in these really demonizing, dehumanizing ways. And I was like, wait, what is going on here? So I started to examine the language. I started to examine the belief that putting formerly marginalized groups on top and kicking former top dogs to the curb was a quote unquote solution. And from my perspective, if we're still operating in a system that needs there to be losers for there to be winners, then the system sucks and it's time to overhaul it altogether.
Yes.
So I started to examine hierarchy and realize like hierarchy is actually the issue, because that's the organizational structure that requires there to be losers and winners. And it's time for us to evolve out of that altogether. Hierarchy is not like a thing, right? It's not like a 3D object built with bricks and mortar. It's an abstraction. It's a concept. We're the ones who give life to hierarchy by speaking its language, by operating within its frequencies. So in my new book, I'm helping people break down the markers of hierarchical languaging so we could start to take responsibility for our world.
Right.
I don't think that people need to have a big podcast, a big social media following, a television show to have an impact on our world. Just by changing our everyday language and having conversations with people in our neighborhoods, we can affect massive change. So yes, this book is a toolkit to do just that. And it gives us like actual solutions, actual tools that we could start implementing now to transform our culture out of this outdated hierarchy model and into what I'm calling betterarchy.
Yeah, and it's so important because with people that don't do what you do or I do, don't fully, I think at this point they're getting to realize this, but they don't really know how this switching of language out of nowhere has had such a heavy and hard impact on our country. And it's not an accident. This is like very, very well documented. I've done shows on linguistic programming and all kinds of things like that. So I think one of the biggest words that has been used in this kind of voodoo of turning our country upside down is equity. You know, people will fight all day long about the word equity, and suddenly out of nowhere, they basically took away equality, switched it with equity, and didn't tell anyone. So people that aren't paying attention are thinking, well, diversity, equity, and inclusion, that's a great thing. They're not realizing, no, that's not equality. So did you see that happen right away because of what you do? Because this is a key word that everyone is seeing, and masses of people do not understand the difference.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I appreciate you bringing it up. I did see it happen right away. And I don't think people are understanding how much of this giant psyop, or these very many different giant psyops, are resting on identity, identity politics, ideological confusion. This idea that because we have slightly different shades of skin color, that we don't all bleed, cry, orgasm, grieve. You know, they try to do away with our shared humanity, propped up by these minute differences. So the whole diversity, equity, inclusion thing is a scam, because diversity does not include diversity of thought, right, diversity of religious practice. It's diversity of these shallow optics that mean nothing. We know equity has come to mean equity of outcome, equality of outcome, which is insane. That's straight up communism. That doesn't work. It's like, you know, putting a bunny and a tiger in the same race together and then shaming the tiger for running faster. Like, it's crazy. We are not all equal. We're equally valued. We're equally worthy, but we have different gifts. We have different shadows. That's never going to change. And same with inclusion. You know, this inclusion thing is very infantilizing. It has nothing to do with including, again, diversity of ideas and opinions. It's just, oh, let's pick one Black person and one gay person and one autistic child, and now we have ourselves a sitcom.
Right, exactly. Fixed. Exactly. That's so true. And people have watched this. You and I probably saw it earlier. I saw it in L.A. I was a writer. I am a writer. But obviously right now I have to find a different way to do that.
Right.
OK, I still have faith in a future that where distribution is not based on diversity, equity, and inclusion. But I did see this in the early mid 2000s. There was a big building. I call it the Death Star, built in the middle of L.A. And I feel like this building was built, and the whole thing, they just decided, forget it. It's not going to be covert anymore. We're going to be very overt about our plans. And from that point on, what I saw was the construction of what you're talking about. I mean, it was there before, but then it became in your face, because the other thing that went away and then it spread out to the rest of the country was the idea of merit, of earning it, of hard work, and there is no substitute for that. The rewards come from putting in the effort. And now we're in a place where to even say that things should be merit-based or earned it, when you were coming up or I was coming up as writers in different genres, but in writers in general, you know, there's like the low level jobs and the assistant to the assistant. And then you move up to the coordinator, and then you're getting, and then maybe you'll get the good assignment. And then you do, it's a process, you know, it's a process. Now it's demand now. And then also what I was seeing there was that they had all these groups starting, be it GLAAD or BLM early groups or whatever. And they were skipping over, even friends of mine that had Emmys and Oscars couldn't get jobs. But these people that were coming out of these special groups that had funding from NGOs, they were getting these jobs that you would usually take 20 years. Is that a demoralization process? What is that? What is the end goal for doing that, for taking all of that, that stuff that actually feels that you earn it? What is that process about?
I think it's absolutely a demoralization process. You hit the nail on the head. We know that demoralization is the first step in ideological subversion. And so, like, we have this whole new generation that doesn't even know what a work ethic is. You know, and I don't know how we're going to teach them at this phase of the game, but you're totally right. Like, we did the gruntiest of grunt work. You know, I had so many internships,
me too.
CNN, too. NBC. I worked for nothing.
Me
you know,
too.
It was great to just hear my copy read on air, you know, and it's like, now I'm supposed to tip the person for running my credit card at the dry cleaner. Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. And I think that blogs were actually a big part of it because, you know, there's a thing called journalistic ethics. Like, we're not dealing in ad hominems. We're not going after character. We're talking about the issues at hand. Blogs started to emerge. And then those of us who worked our butts off to just get like a little piece in the LA Weekly or whatever it was,
right.
You know, now we're having their stuff blazed all over the internet, and it was given the same credence, the same validation. And so I think that was like the first step that I saw in terms of like the demoralization of journalism as a whole, secondary, of course, to putting ads in the op-ed section.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Like, that's where it was like, you didn't have to hone your craft. You didn't have to pay
intern,
your dues.
Multiple internships.
You didn't have to do any of those things.
To meet people that might read your stuff. I did the same thing you did. I mean, that was just, and you know what? There was something about it because I mean, I wonder if you think this, but I think it steals, it erodes something that is so important in having a lasting career that is real, which is this sense of pride in what you're doing and honing your craft. You know, that was the whole thing. When I was coming up, it was all about honing your craft. And it was like, you know, until you're on the rewrite or the 10th rewrite, you're not really working on it yet. And now I feel like, and now add in AI, and we have an entire generation of journalists that wouldn't even know where to begin from where we were.
100%. And it's interesting how you said earlier, like, you know, you look forward to getting back to writing. And I feel the same. You know, it's like, I don't want to be on camera doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm super happy to be connecting with you, but I would prefer to have a platform where my writing could live. That is my craft. And I have a lot of pride in having honed that craft.
Me
and
too.
Those options are not currently available. And I remember the first time I was canceled was in early 2012. And I wrote an article for Reality Sandwich that was tackling gender reassignment surgery.
Wow, you were on it early. Good.
I was on it really early. And my perspective was, look, I'm all about freedom. So if this is what people want to do, Godspeed. But Occam's razor, wouldn't it just be simpler to expand our definitions of gender instead of shoving a small minority of people into the Western medical paradigm and inviting them to go through all these crazy surgeries to become something that they aren't really? So that was the first time I was like attacked. And it was by this blogger who went after me so hardcore. And when all of a sudden I was in these emergency meetings with the editor, I'm like, why do we care what a blogger thinks? Like, this person is off their rocker. They're not tackling my article from any intelligent, like, journalistic perspective. This is just victim consciousness having a tantrum. And it was weird to me that we were validating it. And that's what I see more and more. And I always wonder, in terms of, you know, the shit show that has become journalism, is there not one editor in any of these newsrooms with ethics, with a heart, with integrity? Like, how are those people sleeping at night?
I think those people got weeded out. I saw it happen on the other side with producers, line producers, showrunners, like, where people couldn't get jobs anymore to the point that they stopped trying. And then the people that were getting the jobs were kind of towing the line, or if you'd go in and pitch something, and then you'd see that, like, and they always, the people were getting younger and younger, and you were wondering, like, why is everyone in here so young? You know, I'm not even that old, and I'm thinking, this is, something's weird here. I think there was a purge, a slow but very obvious purge. And then the other thing is, what you're talking about is Saul Alinsky attacked the person, not the, like, you know, not the message. never debate a topic. I also think that what might have happened, and I certainly think did happen on a larger scale with the, what I call the Poison Ivy League. I mean, I went to a school that was right under that realm. But I will say this, that I think that Weather Underground and that whole movement, they all went into to academia, a lot of them, to really infiltrate that. And what happened to journalism schools after me, like for me, when I was in school, it was like, you know, you needed to get your two, you know, sources, and then you had to make sure that it was real. And then everything, you couldn't put any opinion in if you were an actual journalist and all of that. And I saw it, but slowly but surely. But I do think the Saul Alinsky model of, you know, bowling people over, like what you're talking about with that blogger, I think that that's become the norm. You watch people like that Taylor Lorenz lose her mind, and she's crying because she's such a good journalist, and she didn't even never came up in the world we did, you know. And to me, how much of this is that Marxism, communism kind of Weather Underground infiltration, which basically was that, and went all the way to the top of academia. Now they're pumping out now, it looks like 20 years of students that are very influenced by that, both in journalism and education.
Yeah, I think, of course, it's that, you know, Marxist Maoist takeover. And then I think those who know better are frozen by cowardice. You know, I forgive the kids because they come by it honestly, but when I'm dealing with people our age who are parroting that nonsense, I have no respect for it. Right. You know, I was doing some freelance writing for a fictional blog in 2019, 2020, and I wrote a podcast, and I had pitched it ahead of time. I'm like, this is a romance about a Jewish American princess and a Nicaraguan refugee named Jamal. Like, I think it was pretty clear. And then I wrote it in Jamal's Patois accent, and the editor, who had a couple sun spins on me, was like, this is cultural appropriation, Danny. We would never run something so racist. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what's racist about it? I'm writing in my ex-boyfriend's dialect. And he's like, you can't do that. And I was like, oh, really? I can't do that. So are you telling me, wow, Mark Twain was exactly also guilty of cultural appropriation? And he said, yes.
Yes.
And I just said, shame on you. Like, I don't know what has happened. You're a white dude and you think you need to do this to protect for yourself, but like, I'm embarrassed for you.
Yeah, I mean, good for you, because there not enough people did that. And like you said, it's because it's gone on so long. Now, with your first book, when you went to write that, where were you in your head that you just said, enough, I can't do this in sound bites. I got to lay it out. Was there a period of time where you just went to the other side and you said, I got to start fighting this? Was there a specific thing, or was it just a lot of things?
Well, the first book came out of me years before. I was actually living in a commercial refrigerator. And oh, nice. Over the course of a couple days, the first Quantum Languaging book just came through. But at that time, I still had a column, you know, at that point, it was a Santa Fe Reporter, and I was doing other things. And then I was approached by like a spiritual publisher who said, we'd like to publish a book on quantum languaging. And I said, great, I have it, let's do it. I'm very stubborn, right? So I didn't realize journalism was dead and I was totally ejected until way later. And for me, I'm guessing you and I are similar, like, yeah, it's just the right thing to do, to speak out. Like, I'm not gonna watch this happen and not use my voice and my critical thinking to attempt to safeguard humanity. It's nothing I think about, it's just the right thing to do. So when they started, you know, that was my thing with the woke culture and, you know, the political correctness was like, guys, this is going in a very dangerous direction. Let's nip it now before it goes any further. Same thing with the masks, same thing with the injections. You know, every time it's like, guys, like, I've read Project for a New American Century. Yeah, I've studied too. Club of Rome and, you know, Fabian Society. I know where this is going. You right. don't want to know where this is going. Stand up now. It's going to get harder, harder, harder. And I didn't realize that humanity was this cowardly. I really had no idea.
No. And, you know, it's funny, both of us, because I saw it too. I had written a screenplay about Hannah Arendt and her covering Eichmann in Jerusalem in the 60s, the only trial of a Nazi in in Jerusalem and her experience, because when she came back and she told some truths that the powers that be did not want said, she got very attacked. And so I really dug in when I wrote that script, and I looked at a lot of things in 19. I wanted to know, like, 1930s Germany, not 1942 or 1946, 1930s Germany. And I saw so many things that were happening during COVID that I'm like, and because I had that background of watching the slow burn, like you're talking about, like saying this is not good. And I saw it very early. Of course, immediately I got kicked off of YouTube, but I'll tell you, I to speak out like that. And then of course you're attacked, and like the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center, I'm like an anti-Semite. I'm a million other things. I bring up the Rockefellers or Operation Paperclip. I'm a conspiracy theorist. And I'm like, no, this is real. So what do you make of the complete insanity of the fact-checking fraudulent industry and the idea that these people are protecting us against misinformation and disinformation? What is the voodoo going on there?
Well, it's funny how we didn't need fact checkers until Obama legalized propaganda and all of our mainstream media started to pump out even more lies on 24/7 repeat.
Right.
So I think it's utterly insane. Like, there's obviously a direct correlation between the censorship industrial complex and these fact checkers. And you do the slightest bit of cursory research into, you know, Politico,
right,
or any, you know, any of these agencies, they're all funded by the same Open Society, Clinton, right, Foundation, right, Annenberg. They're the same entities,
yeah,
who are attempting, yeah, to silence speech. And I notice, I don't know if you've delved into the Consilience Project in your research.
I've read about it, but go ahead, tell my audience.
Yeah, so it's like the disinformation arm of the Santa Fe Institute, who are the ones who are like developing all these psyops for us. And you look at the board of the Consilience Project, which is allegedly a nonprofit just to educate us about propaganda. There are no journalists on their board. They're all either like intelligence,
right,
big tech, futurists. You know, I'm supposed to listen to Brett Weinstein tell me what propaganda is, or Robert Malone. It's like, no, why don't you guys stay in your lane, and you can shill for whoever you're shilling for, but no need to rewrite what journalism is for those of us who actually know.
Right. And, you know, I went through down that path with the Aspen Institute myself about 4 years ago, when all roads led to the same billionaire oligarchy. I call them that. They think that they're the parent company of planet Earth, and we're just allowed, they're just nice enough to allow us to live here. But they do fund all that stuff. And that is the scariest part to me. There's also a fraudulent journalism school called the Poynter Institute. And if, yep, you see them with anyone. And now apparently they have a bunch of different groups, the Arnold Ventures and other are funding them, but they have like, so they have Acronym and Courier Newsroom. They have Press Forward. So it appears that the full on billionaire globalist financing coming through these NGOs has not only gone to all of these different groups, and then of course they're giving them to the Association of Indigenous Journalists and the Association of, you know, I'm telling you, it just makes me so crazy. But they're giving grants directly to supposed journalists. They're giving grants to local papers. So what they've done now is they've gone around, I just saw yesterday, $500 million that Press Forward and Arnold Ventures and Knight Foundation and some of the ones you mentioned, MacArthur, they've gone around and they've bought up local papers all over the country. And these papers are free papers that like my grandparents would get on their way out of, you know, the deli. And there's 10 papers. You grab up all the, you know, free ones. And then you spend your Sunday reading the free papers. That is what they're doing. They're doing it on such a minor level that you would never notice. And then a giant level. What is, and nobody seems to be calling this out at all. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
And those of us who are so silenced that no one would even, you know, hear us.
Right.
So I first noticed this back when I was at the LA Weekly, and when we were bought out by Village Voice, then all of a sudden it was like, and at that point I've been working there for 10 years. And then all of a sudden, like, nothing could run if we didn't drop a celebrity's name or it didn't have some sort of like racial cultural bent. So that was my first experience of it on the inside. Of that particular takeover. I'm in New Mexico now, and during, you know, the COVID nonsense when it first started, I used to have a column in the Santa Fe Reporter. Now I'm banned for life, and here's what got me banned. I started calling the New Mexico Health Department to find out, how are you sourcing your numbers? Like, how many cycles of PCR tests are you running, and how are you determining that these are the number of deaths? And I'm not even kidding, Mel, the woman who I was talking to on the phone, she starts whimpering and she's like, I don't understand why you're asking me these questions. I donate money to the Santa Fe Reporter. And I was like,
wow,
that's nice. I'm just trying to do journalism. And it was within like an hour that I got a call from the editor in chief, who's like, you're banned for life. You're never going to publish anything in our paper again. But wow. I did just write an op-ed under a fake name that got in.
Good for you. Good for you. It's funny. I was surprised. I went on basically because I was in Manhattan during the lockdowns, and it was ridiculous. And there was no way we were getting any of it. We're going along with any of it, especially the quantum, you know, the QR code that you had to have to go into places. Obviously we couldn't get that. So we went around the country, and Santa Fe was one of the worst that we found along the way, of people that were completely and totally done. They were fully on board with the COVID, and crazy people yelling at me and Rob to like keep our distance and put your mask over your nose. And it just, you know, and we had always like, we like made our purposefully stop there. And then you learn about New Mexico, and I saw what was going on there. And then this governor, it's like, so it's so crazy what they've done everywhere. And that you go from LA to Santa Fe, and then you find it there too. So it's totally insidious. Now, what I want to also get into, because we talk a lot about homeschooling and we advocate for that. Honestly, if I had kids now, there would be no even question that I would totally homeschool. I look back and I say to my mom, she's 85. I would say, oh, God, I wish you homeschooled me. Even though I was very blessed to have a lot of support to follow my path as you were. But still, I look back, I think like, wow, what would that have been like? So you put together a program that's very necessary, because my audience probably knows, but the teachers unions have teamed up with the World Economic Forum and the UN and UNESCO to do their own literacy training, propaganda training, all of that through our schools, because that's who's really running our schools. So you have a counter program for kids on and teens on propaganda and recognizing it. What are some tools that you have in that program? Because a lot of parents that I know and that watch me are homeschooling, or at least their grandparents are encouraging their children to homeschool their kids.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So it starts off with explaining to teens how the world works. And this is why I don't recommend the course for teens who are under 14 years old, because I like to maintain, you know, to safeguard their innocence for as long as possible. But I help them understand that, like, you live in a matrix that is preying on any self-esteem deficiencies they can find to tell you you're not enough, you're too much, to encourage you to go along with the group, to encourage you to reach outside of yourself for validation, acknowledgement, and anything that truly is going to be internally sourced. So it's breaking down how the world works. It's helping them understand groupthink and how groupthink is really necessary to serve the powers that were. I always put their false power in the past. I never acknowledge it in the present. And then I just break down the basic techniques of propaganda, you know, whether it's divide and conquer, bread and circuses, fear, distraction, repetition, all of those things. And at the same time, I'm also encouraging them to build up their confidence, to have confidence in their authenticity, in their uniqueness, because the more self-esteem they can build up, that renders all of us impervious to the machinations of the social engineers.
Wow, that's so great that you're saying that, because I've been saying this whole time, and this also goes back to studying Nazi Germany and Mao's revolution and the children, because I keep saying to people, the LGBTQ+, the CRT, what they're doing in our schools, they're making weak children who will never, ever question authority, who will always look at the government and the school as the government in a way that Mao's China and Hitler's youth were supposed to, as the state being God, as the state being the parent, as, you know, and really also having people, like you said, never, ever use critical thinking, never question, never step out. And it's funny that you say this too about, and this is important. I was on Jimmy Dore and I said something about what you just said about now this whole new upside down thing where you get your self-esteem and your self-worth and your validation from outside, where like when I was growing up, when I was bullied in like fourth grade, I remember, you know, my mom would be like, you're perfect just the way you are. You need to find your gifts and hone your gifts, and would encourage me and help me, you know, if I wanted to go to dance class or whatever, I'd find the things that made me feel good about myself and achieve. And I said, that's not happening anymore. And a comment was like, that's how you raise a narcissist. Like to think that you're special or that you have something unique is a narcissistic way. That's like child abuse. And I thought, oh my God, I mean, it's a stupid thing on the cesspool that is known as X now, but I'm just saying, like, to think that people would think that way, that encouraging a child to believe in themselves is a problem now. And I think it's bigger than it's coming out of the schools.
Absolutely. It's part of that whole Common Core nonsense. Thank you, Gates, Obama, for shoving that in. And I think it's just an extension of the larger demoralization campaign that self-esteem is conflated with narcissism. And, you know, I had a 13-year-old boy in my course who, you know, because I always give homework, you know, write about a time where you were part of an out-group or an in-group to just help them examine what it's like, you know, to stand in your own knowingness and in your own integrity. And I had this, you know, this was back when these kids were being uninvited from parties for not having the injection, right? Which is so cruel to kids. And so, you know, this 13-year-old was writing about how it really hurt his feelings when he was invited to a birthday party and then uninvited. And then he wrote, but I know I don't have a leg to stand on because I'm a privileged white boy. And that broke my heart to think that, like, boys aren't allowed to feel sad. We're not allowed to have genuine emotion for, you know, the pain and suffering that everyone endures. And instead, we're encouraging men and boys to feel shitty about themselves. Yeah. Like, how is that going to help anyone?
And it's everywhere. It's totally, it's came through the corporations. It's coming through media. It's coming through entertainment. It's coming through sports. It's coming everywhere in the schools. And it's really, it's so cruel. And I'm so grateful for the work you're doing for children as well as for adults, and to decode this. If we don't get a hold of the language and can look at it for what it is and realize that, you know, we need to look at everything skeptically and say, well, what's that about? And what's the next thing? And you put together a course and two books, I think, that are crucial for people to get out there, not just for themselves, but for others. A lot of people are suffering and they're isolated and they're beat down and they're demoralized. And I think it looks like to me, they just need a little bit of encouragement to take back their own power. And I feel like your work is very geared towards empowering people to empower themselves. So I'm so grateful you came, and I look forward to doing more shows in the future. This one is a short one, but we're going to do an extended show because I want to go through your course on the show. But I told Rob to have you on right away because I wanted to share you and your work with my audience. So can you tell my audience where to find you and how to follow you and all that great stuff, and where they can find your books and your course?
Absolutely. And thanks so much for having me, Mel.
My pleasure.
So folks can find me through DannyKatz.com, which is currently being updated, but it's still there. And that's the best way to find your way to my books, my podcasts, my courses, my webinars, Instagram, something.danny. You have to type in the whole thing or I won't pop up, but it's well worth your time to follow me there. I do post every day.
awesome. And we are going to have a special show with you upcoming where you actually take me through your course. So everyone keep an eye out for that. But I was so excited about our talk this week that I said, Rob, we got to get her on right away. So this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, as they say. Thank you so much, my friend. Please go check her out. All her links are below and you will see her here again. I will see you next time. I really appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thanks, Mel.
Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today. It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you, and that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko is ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko.